Good morning. Welcome. It's Tuesday, the 8th of July. Welcome to a special edition of the Roundtable Panel, live from the stage of the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Mwah! For a live audience, they are here, they are beautiful, and we are so excited to be here, and this is a wonderful effort on the road to come to you before a live audience as part of our effort to come to communities, discuss issues of great importance, and this morning, we discuss the impact of the arts on this community, on this county, and on these wonderful arts organizations who populate it in such gorgeous numbers. We have six representatives. Arts and culture is certainly one of the most vibrant sectors of the Berkshire County economy. As a result, the leaders of 10 arts and culture institutions from across Berkshire County have convened the Berkshire Arts and Culture Alliance, known as BACA, B-A-C-A. BACA. We'll call it not that. their job is to advocate and for economic tourism and infrastructure needs of the arts and culture organizations in the county. And we welcome representatives from six of the 10 organizations to make up our panel this morning. Let me introduce them to you. We welcome to the group Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival Associate Artistic Director Kim Chan. Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Hi.
We also welcome to the program from Mass MoCA, their director Christy Edmonds is here.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to be here.
The Williamstown Theater Festival Managing Director of Operations and Advancement, Kit Ingwe, is here as well.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you. We also welcome from the Boston Symphony Orchestra and that place called Tanglewood, President and CEO Chad Smith is here.
Nice to see all of you this morning. Thank you for having me.
We welcome a dear friend, Norman Rockwell Museum Director and CEO, Lori Norton Moffett is here.
Good morning, Joe and friends.
And we also welcome our host this morning, the person who invited us. I think we said, hey, can we come? And she said, yeah, sure, why not? And I think that's sort of how it went, I believe. But and she's been a dear friend for decades. We love her so much, and we have partnered on so many different things. So it was a natural when we came and went on the road to come here to the Colonial Theater. Will you please welcome and just really welcome Berkshire Theater Group Artistic Director and CEO Kate McGuire.
Pleasure. Pleasure to have you all here. Thank you so much.
All right, so let's begin, and I thank you all for being here. I know you're all extremely busy. You've got openings, and this is your top summer season, and for you to take out time of your day, I so appreciate it. We all appreciate it, and it means so much to us. Kate, talk to us just a little bit in introduction, and then we'll get to the inner workings here as to this alliance came about last year, and what was it that brought it all together, that the consensus in the room was we need a group to look after these shared needs?
I think it actually began with a lunch, perhaps, with Chad Smith and Pam Taggi from Jacob's Pillow. Mm-hmm. And they were talking, I believe, I'm going to ask you to speak a little bit more about this, Chad, but they were speaking about the challenges, opportunities we could have if there was a collaborative effort to strengthen the culturals in the Berkshires. Not that we're all, you know, we're each pretty strong individually, but together, and what we bring to the Berkshires, I think, is really critical and important. And Pam sent me an email speaking about this lunch, and I was on board immediately and grateful for the opportunity. And Chad, I don't mean to take your place, Joe, but
Thank you. Yeah, look,
I'll be back at 11.
What's that?
Go ahead.
It's your show.
Yeah.
It was my first summer last year as the CEO and president of the Boston Symphony. I was a student there 30 years ago, but it was my first year, and I was living in out here in the Berkshires and became very, very aware of what all of you know and all the panelists here know, and that this is such a very, very special place in the world where arts and culture is centered in a way that is truly unique. And it is like no other X number of square miles in the world. And I was thinking about some of the challenges that the BSO and Tango would face as I was starting to onboard myself into that work. And I said, well, let me just talk to some of my colleagues, and some of my colleagues that I know from California, this one, Christy. But I reached out to Pam and said, hey, can we talk about, you know, campus issues and how you're thinking about some of these things? And what about tourism? How much does that play? And how do we continue to think about the messaging? And we totally hit it off, and I think very quickly said, look, let's get everyone together, right? And I think that there have been groups that have formed in the past, so this was not a wholly new idea, I'll be very candid. But we said, let's formalize this and talk about some of those critical issues. Less about programming, because I think that these are very, you know, all of our organizations have really strong internal understanding of their artistic purpose, but more around some of those big macro issues, transportation, shared needs around housing and temporary housing for artists, joint marketing. How do we get people excited from around the country and around the world to come and spend their time and their leisure time and leisure dollars here in the Berkshires? And how do we continue to make this that singular place in the world? We're incredibly pleased that everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. And again, I think I was able to kind of step back and say, all right, help me understand this community and the work that the community has been doing for so long. But like, how do we advocate for ourselves? And I recognize that as the CEO of the Boston Symphony, I live most of my time, 9 months out of the year, in Boston and have access to Beacon Hill, and we're able to advocate on behalf of the BSO. But more broadly, could we use that access and to advocate for arts and culture broadly and generally here in the Berkshire County? One thing that we know is arts and culture and the creative economy in the Berkshire County is something like a $1.5 to $2 billion industry. It's enormous for our community. It's something like the third largest driver in Berkshire County. We have great power and we have great influence, and we need to use that to advocate for this very, very special place.
Christy, how much of this do you think also comes out of COVID, right? I mean, a lot, it was kind of a reset, wasn't it?
Coming out of COVID?
Yes.
Oh.
For artistic organizations.
Yeah.
I mean, for all of us, but certainly.
Yeah, for all of us, for artistic organizations, certainly in the performing arts. The performing arts, you know, if you think about it, and film. I mean, our habits of how we wanted to spend time together around live performing arts, we lost a lot of that audience in that time period. It was, you know, shut down. So coming out of it is about recalibrating everybody. I think, you know, the other piece that when we were getting together to form this, Mass MoCA is both a contemporary art museum and center, but it also presents an enormous amount of performing arts.
Right.
And we have creative development residencies. So to me, part of the rebounding out of COVID, and I was here as that was lifting. I mean, I started 3.5 years ago. So the relationship and the rapport here between cultural leaders is really significant. You know, we've got two of our elders here, stalwarts, but a lot of leadership transitions have happened. You lost a lot of different directors, CEOs, executive directors in different parts of the world. So there was a shuffle around leadership. And here in the Berkshires, you pick up the phone to a colleague in another organization, and it's not like, hey, step off my dress. It is, how can I help? How do we lean in? Part of how I was even able to learn the depth of that was because of colleagues in this on this stage and part of the, you know, regional ecology.
What's it like to be an elder, Laurie?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, Christy.
Yeah, it's a word with ultimate love and respect.
I take it that way. Thank you so much. I wanted to reflect on a duality of our missions of our cultural community here in the Berkshires, because first and foremost, we are committed and devoted to our local community and to serving the citizens and constituents and students in Berkshire County. And yet we draw audiences from all over the nation and, in fact, from around the world. And this is a challenge for our organizations when we cultivate a workforce, hope that people can get to work, hope that visitors can get here to the county and navigate around the county. So we really think hard about how to deliver programming seasonally to our visitors that come from all over, but all year round we are here for this community, and you are here and keeping our organizations going. So I think that's another special aspect of this alliance that we think about and talk about with the infrastructure issues that frankly face all of the businesses in Berkshire County, but are acute for particularly performing arts, I think, in the summer, who bring so many artists in and need housing, transportation, and support services for this creative community.
Kit from Williamstown, of you relatively new to this, of what it was like to walk in and say, okay, this is what we've got, let's go.
Yeah, I feel really grateful that this coalition, this group of people, had already come together before I started. There is so much immense knowledge at this panel and with the other four organizations not represented here today. This area is amazing. This community, the culture, the opportunities, the arts opportunities here, and the fact that the organizations that we are sitting with right now are willing to work in partnership with each other so deeply. It's really unique. But there are some actual challenges, right? The lack of access to the area in a public manner, meaning trains, and then taking your train from, you get to Albany, and then what do you do? It's really challenging for our audiences and for folks who don't come here with vehicles. Our artists are struggling to find places to live, and we struggle to find them for them. So the fact that this group of leaders has come together already to start advocating for change to those challenges, I just feel really lucky to be a part of this group of 10.
So you're in Williamstown, and so the tippy top of the county. And meanwhile, at Jacob's Pillow, you're the, near the bottom of the county. And I mean, it's a big county. It's huge. And I mean, that in and of itself is a challenge, right?
Without public transportation, yes. But I would say that the challenges for seasonal housing as well as year-round housing are the same regardless of where you are in the county.
Has housing always been, I mean, you've been doing this how many years? I mean,
30,
not you personally,
theater.
But for the theater.
30 at Berkshire Theater, and then before that, another 8 years at Shakespeare and Company.
But as far as the Berkshire Theater Festival has been in business for
100 almost.
Almost 100.
Yes, so, I'm 100 years old.
But I'm guessing
that's why I'm an elder.
I get the elder remark.
So, but my point being that that had to have been an issue 100 years ago. Where do we put these people who are coming up to perform?
You know, when Christy was talking about COVID, the other piece I was thinking about are the words not for profit, and that we seem to have, in some areas, forgotten what those words mean. It means that the Berkshire Theater is so fortunate for all the audiences that come to us. We operate at well over 50% capacity, which is often what is considered the norm. So our audiences are coming to us. But the other piece of this are donations. And those donations since COVID have been shrinking. And with the state of the federal government pulling back at this point, those donations continue to shrink. So 50% of all that we do is not getting covered in the way that it used to. The struggle is just so much more difficult. And theaters and museums around the country are in the same sort of shape that we are. The wonder of what's here is that this is a cultural destination. And so to be able to partner and hold it all up is important. But not-for-profit, not-for-profit, not-for-profit. What does that mean today?
How do you get that point across so that people understand? And because I'm not looking into a magic eight ball or anything, but it doesn't seem like that funding situation is going to change anytime soon.
No. I don't have an answer, except we each keep trying. We each keep getting the word out there and continue to try to make sure that the public knows that we are not only here for entertainment, that the arts are what make us a civilized people, and that we collectively are in every school child's life. Every school child's life in Berkshire County is made stronger and more beautiful because of what the arts do here. That's part of the not-for-profit. Because in Massachusetts, in Massachusetts, it's part of our designation as a not-for-profit that we're here for the purposes of education. Go back to John Adams.
Yeah. But I don't want to jump in, but I do desperately.
Please.
Yeah, jump in.
coming from elsewhere, I think it's also important here in Massachusetts. I mean, think of it.
Where did you come from?
I was in Los Angeles prior.
Okay. All right.
So I'm from the West Coast, lived in different parts of the world. But to me, what's very interesting here, and I talk about it ad nauseum, but it is that we are also living in a commonwealth. So when you talk about not-for-profit, you're also talking about engines for the commonwealth, the common good. It is not the profitability of a single individual or a set of investors or any of that. It is something else. So that piece in sort of in the civic fabric in Massachusetts, to me, is astonishing. I mean, punching so far above its weight because the citizenry here, the protection and care around democracy is active and alive, honor systems, farm stands. I mean, oh my God. So this thing that you're talking about, Kate, is really important. Where does that resourcing come from? The fact of the matter is us coming together here is also a way to help elected officials and where tax dollars go be able to make sure that we have our hand in the air. And it's not a hand in the air against one. This idea that there's a zero-sum game, that if, you know, Jacob's Pillow gets a new theater, then somehow MassMoca is not going to have a way to protect its infrastructure. That is not how we think. What we think about are where are these common cares and common concerns, because we are also economic anchors. And that economic anchoring means it's not just what you do in your organization. It is how the actions and activity of what you do in your organization will generate benefit to the community writ large, and in this case, the community writ large being the Berkshires, but also speaks to a world. I mean, I think of the performing arts every time, even today, we're together. We are in a temporary democratic society where we're leaning forward to listen to the ideas, stories, and possibilities of others. We are here as strangers, gathered in public, to hear and exchange knowledge. That's what we do in the arts. That's what performing arts do. That's what exhibition spaces also do. We're publishing ideas onto the walls and the gallery floors of contemporary thinkers, of historic thinkers, and continuously trying to keep in circulation the very principles of why art both matters, not only to our sense of what is sublime or provocative or disrupting to our complacencies or, you know, a relief somehow. It's also about how we add civic benefit. So coming together, we looked at things that we've heard from every single one of our communities and how it plays out in the DNA of our organizations. Housing. It's not just for artists. It's not just visiting artists, although just. Those visiting artists are critical for the way in which all of these things happen. So making sure that they have a place to be, and also to look after the work that they're doing, and also to join the community as a temporary inhabitant is important. We have seasonal workers that are coming in to bump up what our staffs alone are maxed at, so we also have seasonal workers that are coming in. Housing is a really big deal, and we've heard that certainly in North Adams. My gosh, it's, you know, high-quality housing is a crucial piece there. MassMoca is working on building and developing a place that is going to have probably around 40 apartment unit type spaces at the Sullivan School. This is a direct response to the community, right? And our needs collectively. We've talked about transportation. That's another one. People walk out of Massmoka and you can see them looking for their Lyft or Uber. And I'm like, good luck with that. What time's your plane? Or, you know. And I'll say, go over to that pub and tell somebody you'll give them $100 if they drive you to Albany. And in fact, that person arrives and does it. So transportation's a big one too, because we can link some of what people are yearning to be able to do to saturate themselves throughout our county if we can build apparatus there. And we're thinking about that as well. And then there's just truly infrastructure, y'all. Many of us are in older buildings, or we're in adaptive reuse, in our case, giant industrial factory, 300,000 square feet. I think it's interesting. Most of us call our spaces campuses.
Yes.
Right? That's an indicator of just how much we're trying to look after. And those infrastructures, over time, without investment or no resources to deal with deferred maintenance, you're going to see a cataclysm if we do not find the vehicles to push infrastructure in. Any infrastructure that comes in to help uplift a cultural organization is going to connect to your municipality, your city, everybody. So anytime we can do that. And these are the things that the Commonwealth government is looking after to a certain extent. And we're wanting to make sure together that the resourcing does not dry up as it moves west, but actually leaps towards us and change part of that pattern so that we can shore ourselves to make a durable future for everyone.
Chad, when you... By the way, you're listening to a special edition of the Roundtable. We are coming to you from the stage of the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, as part of our WAMC On the Road series, and we're discussing the impact of the arts on this county and community. You mentioned this, Chad. I mean, you have your most of your time is in Boston, but then you're here obviously in the summer. Are these all are these things that you're also dealing with in Boston as well as here? Are there a commonality, or are they very much separated?
No, I think that a lot of these issues, to be very candid, are issues that everybody, all arts organizations, big and small across the country, are dealing with, certainly across the Commonwealth. I think what is unique about BACA is that we've come together to get to a place where we're going in front of our elected officials and asking them until they just have to say no. So, and that's an important issue here. Many of us have relationships with elected officials, and one thing that we hear is, you know, tell us what you need, right? Mm-hmm. And advocate for yourself. Collectively, our voice is that much louder and that much stronger. When we're talking about economic impact of $1.5 to $2 billion for arts and culture on the creative economy.
In the Berkshires.
That is a platform that you can't not address. And I think, you know, part of our reason here is that it is meant to be, you know, there was a big omnibus housing package that was passed in the Commonwealth. Our attempt, our work, is to get our organizations and our community included specifically in those kinds of omnibus packages. As the Commonwealth is thinking about transportation infrastructure, our role is to advocate for these communities in the Berkshires to have kind of high-quality access to transportation, inter-county, inter-town, transportation. And finally, we want to collectively be able to tell our story about what makes Berkshire County so special. This is a unique space in the world. So, for example, I think next Friday, the 10 marketing directors of our organizations are getting together to talk about what our collective message is about this space. It's not about Tanglewood. It's not about Massmoka. It is individually, we're all going to do our individual marketing, but it's also about, you know, that the Berkshires is about art, it's about dance, it's about music, it's about theater, it's about, you know, so much activity. I was thinking a lot about, you know, we're realistic too. You asked the question of, like, what's happening with funding? Funding is you know, funding is drying up. We know that. We see it happening at the federal level. That has implications downstream at the state level. So when the federal funding is cut at the federal level, less money is going to the states. We want to say, we're not looking for a handout here. Nobody in the arts and culture is looking for a handout. We're looking for stimulus. And if there are ways that we can get some help in stimulating our investments in things like deferred maintenance and our campuses, that is, those are real jobs for construction, for also, you know, many, many different types of laborers in our community. So this is real; these are real dollars that are going to be amplified and spent here in the Berkshires.
I just want to mention that the four other organizations that are a part of BACA, Barrington Stage Company, the Clark Art Institute, the Mahawy Performing Arts Center, and Shakespeare and Company, and all working on that. So when it comes to the message, Lori, that you see that really needs to go out into the world would be what?
I'd like to pick up on something Kate was addressing, as we are part of a very large not-for-profit community in Berkshire County. And as we've talked about funding sources becoming more scarce, I wanted to share with you and reflect on the scholarly work of the late Williams College economics professor Stephen Shepherd, who did a study that showed that Berkshire County per capita had the largest number of not-for-profit organizations in the entire country. This is staggering, because the purpose of this work is to serve our communities. And when we think about what that means for Berkshire County, is we have hundreds of organizations that are committed to improving the community. That places a tremendous strain on fundraising, but it also invites a conversation among all of us who live here and visit here to think about what is important to us, because it's our choice and how we step up to defend, to save, to invest in, to preserve what we care about. And I think that's true for the cultural community here. It's true for the social service and educational sector in our community, healthcare. We have an abundance, really, a richness, if you think of it, of people committed to doing good in this community. And our ability to support these organizations, and if it's not possible to support them financially, most of us can volunteer and find a way mm-hmm. to support the services that are offered and sustained by these organizations that drive not only the economy, but the quality of life, and make an investment in this community. So I like to think about that notion rather than of scarcity, but of abundance, mm-hmm. and how at a time when we do see the shift at a federal level of where tax dollars are being spent and how that is affecting things on a state level, we can make choices as citizens of what we want to be sure will still be here on the other end when things shift, and things tend to always shift historically and over time. So I give thought to that myself. What organizations do I want to make sure are here next year and the year after to defend and serve the values that I hold dear for my community?
Kim, as you were, as Jacob Spillo is going out and you're working on this new theater, and I assume that that gives you an opportunity to, not the only opportunity, but an opportunity to find out what your audience is looking for and what your audience wants. What came out of that?
Well, I think we have more than one audience. We have multiple audiences. And this new theater is really a wonderful, exciting moment to bring in even more audiences. And because we can now bring a wider variety of dance experiences to the Berkshires. And part of the ambition of the new theater is dance at the intersection of technology. And what that also presents is an opportunity for the audiences to learn with us about a part of the dance field that has not gotten a lot of wide public acknowledgement, but it also is an enormous opportunity for workforce development, because art doesn't happen or dance doesn't happen when the dancers and technologists show up on stage. We need to train our production staff on how to collaborate with the artists and technologists to make a show happen. We need more marketing staff who are more skilled in reaching different audiences on the numerous public platforms that you can find audiences at today. So I think that to me is the exciting part of it. And as I've watched the exhibit that just opened on Sunday, Dancing the Algorithm, come together, I've come to see how it's really an expansion of who puts together dance, who contributes to it, and how we all work more closely in an iterative way to end at an experience that invites audiences into wonder in ways that they had not thought of previously.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to Kit about Williamstown and their current position, and then also talk a little bit about the art itself. We will do all of that as we come back to our special edition of the Roundtable Panel, live from the stage of the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Cue the audience. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our special edition of the Roundtable Panel. Sounds good. Live from the stage of the Colonial and part of our On the Road series. And here we are to talk about the impact of the arts on this county and this community. And we've been having this discussion over the last 45 minutes or so. I want to check in with Kit Ingwe, who is from Williamstown Theater Festival, and as I mentioned, Managing Director of Operations and Advancement. You are, Williamstown is set a reset, right? I mean, it's a bit of a reset. Yeah. And this is an historic, well-known theater festival that has been around for decades and has a storied history. And how much are you starting from scratch?
Oh, great question. Williamstown is its 71st season here at Williams College and in Williamstown. We are building on the legacy of the organization, right? So this company knows how to produce theater. It knows how to produce theater in Williamstown. And so we are doing that. And the past couple of years have been a lot quieter as the organization has spent some time looking to the future to determine what change is necessary for the organization. And so this year, instead of producing just theater over the course of a couple weeks, of 2 months, we are producing three intensive, immersive weekends of storytelling, of theatrical experiences. So in addition to three shows on the 62 Center stages, we are also standing up a new performance venue in North Adams, neighbor of Mass MoCA, called The Annex, where we will do a much smaller scale theater, very intimate. We will have live music, we'll have some comedy, we're having a dance show and an opera. We are also doing an ice show, so Williamstown Theater Festival's first ice show, and the whole season is based on Tennessee Williams, who is a piece of our legacy, right? Tennessee would come and be in residence in Williamstown when he was alive, has a deep relationship with Nikos. And so I think it's built on the legacy of Williamstown. And the business model is completely different. We're trying something new that we think will attract younger audiences who haven't necessarily made the journey to Williamstown before. And so we're trying to pull them up and hopefully continue to partner with all of these organizations as we build out over the next couple years.
Chad, do you all feel those changes of obviously your organization may vary, but changes that are necessary and that you have to freshen things up and not do them like you did 70 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think regeneration, rebirth, reevaluation is a critical part of any arts organization, and particularly legacy arts institutions. And I think about the Boston Symphony in Tanglewood as a legacy arts institution. We've been here for decades, right? So the BSO was founded in 1881, our first concerts in the Berkshires, I think, were in the 1930s. So Tanglewood became a part of the BSO in 1940. And in many ways, it changed the organization. The organization ceased to be just a performance institution. It became a center of learning, too. And I always think about Tanglewood as like, it is either one of the great music festivals in the world with one of the great advanced training programs at its core, the Tanglewood Music Center, or it is a great campus of learning built on the back of one of the great orchestras. That said, legacy is an amazing thing, and it is something that you can build on, but it also can provide a lot of inertia. And I always think about kind of the Boston Symphony of today and where we're going is we want momentum more than we want inertia. We want to be driving to some place, to this future where we think about ourselves in three critical ways. We think about ourselves as an organization dedicated to service and serving our audiences and our communities through these incredible musical performances. We're dedicated to uplifting and amplifying the voices of artists so that they can tell the stories that they need to tell and we need to hear. And we're dedicated to advancing our art form and pushing our art form forward. That is the opposite of staying the same.
Right.
Now, it's a legacy we have to honor. Like, you know, over the weekend we had an amazing Beethoven concert and an amazing Rachmaninoff concert. But we bring artists here from around the world, the truly great international artists, into this community so that they can do their best work. And each of the arts organizations on this stage does the same thing. We benefit so much in Berkshire County because these radically creative artists are walking through our streets. They're buying coffee in line behind you. John Mulaney was performed at Tanglewood last week, and he told the... Yeah. I will say, it was a pretty great weekend. We had Nas on Friday night,
yes.
And then we had John Batiste on Saturday, and then we had John Mulaney. It was a good weekend. But it was this meaning that John Mulaney got up and he started his set. You know, this is a guy that performs all around the world. And he got up and he started telling jokes about the Berkshires. It was so specific, and it reminded me that, like, it is special.
Yeah.
People come here, it's not just a show. They come in, they're staying in our hotels, they're eating in our restaurants, they're going to the cafes, they're buying books in our bookstores, and they're absorbing the remarkable energy of this place. So we are changed by the activity of these artists, but it's important for all of us, and I think everyone will say this, and I'll back off, but the artists are changed by their experiences here.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd like to follow up on Chad's comment about innovation and share with you a collaboration between Tanglewood and Norman Rockwell Museum that happened on Sunday morning, where 100 families with young children were enthralled by the hip-hop artist Baba Israel, who partnered with the lead character designer from Sesame Street, our trustee at Norman Rockwell Museum, Lewis Henry Mitchell, and brought all the arts together. Baba Israel had 50 kids on the floor, sitting right in front of him with three musicians from the symphony, the visual artist, and he had these children engaged in storytelling, theater, dance, music, visual arts, and living in their pure imaginations, and it was magical. So this innovation of using our traditional arts but inspiring young people's minds, it was just the most joyful experience after a really extraordinary weekend in the Berkshires. So there's lots of innovation that can be happening among us and between us as well as within our individual entities.
I was noodling around on the internet last night, and I was looking, and up came an ad. And it said, the hottest ticket in the Berkshires. And it was a Tanglewood. Anybody want to guess? It's from a third-party site. But Heather Cox Richardson.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Heather Cox Richardson. I mean, that, so kudos, because that's really cool, and it's obviously hitting a nerve.
You know, for obvious reasons, but yeah, I think part of what I've learned in my short time here in the Berkshires is that our audiences are hungry for not just a transactional experience, to coming to a concert, having it, and then leaving. What we find is that our audiences are interested in lingering, conversing, challenging one another with difficult conversations. Yes, we want to perform, put on performances that inspire and uplift, but also our audiences have this, I think, real craving for to be engaged in the conversations of today. And I will admit, my colleagues at this table work in art forms, which have been engaging in the conversations today probably a lot more enthusiastically than classical music has, right? So, you know, Christy and I have had this. But my attempt here with coming to the BSO is really to change that. I want our art form, this art form that has been around for 500 years, 1,000 years, if you go back to the Cluny monasteries in France and, you know, Gregorian chant, be engaged in discussions. And so Heather Cox Richardson is someone that you know, I will tell you, Yo-Yo Ma said, you know, I have this idea. I want to talk about the intersection of kind of the French Revolution and Beethoven. I was like, all right, I'm with you. Where are you going? And he said, you know, as you think about it, right, I'm playing the Eroica symphony in an arrangement, a quartet. And he said, but, you know, the Eroica was in 1803, and that was the same year that Napoleon crowned himself Emperor of France, and, you know, so Beethoven changed the title of the symphony from the Napoleonic symphony to the Heroic symphony, but in order to support this war effort, you know, he sold the Louisiana, there was the Louisiana Purchase, and I was like, you need to tell this story. Like, this is something that you can do. He's like, well, you know, Heather Cox Richardson and I want to do this. And so these are the things that can happen here. And certainly they're happening at the Lindy Center at Tanglewood, but they are literally happening at every one of the organizations in this community. That is what makes Mass Mocha so special, and the Jacob's Pillow and the theater community so special. These conversations, these intersections of ideas are happening every single day.
The idea of legacy, though, is so critical to what each of us do.
Sure.
You know, we mentioned that I'm 100 years old now. And so I've been diving deep into the history. And I had a conversation yesterday with a curator that we're working with. And she started talking about Mabel Choate, who was one of the grand dames of Stockbridge. Thank you. Mabel Choate moved the pieces. She moved the Mission House from where it was on Prospect Hill to a different location so we could honor the Indians and understand what all of our grounds mean. All the landscape that we walk on was Indian land, owned by the Indians. And how do we dedicate our thinking? That is fresh thinking that we are all of a sudden sort of rediscovering those worlds. So Mabel Choate moved that Mission House. Mabel Choate moved what was a casino to become the Playhouse. Mabel Choate moved all of Stockbridge around. Ted Shawn performed on the front lawn of the Playhouse and then went up to Jake's Pillow and discovered that beautiful area. I mean, the area is so rich in history, and that can inform and refresh as well. And every artist, an artist isn't an artist unless they are discovering new. So every artist that comes to the Berkshires is discovering.
Mm-hmm. Kate McGuire, Lori Norton Moffat, Chad Smith, Kit Ingwe, Christy Edmonds, and Kim Chan, all with us this morning in our live broadcast from the Colonial Theater in downtown Pittsfield. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our program. We'll also include this wonderful studio audience. We'll do all of that after a break. And news. WAMC is on the road. We've made our way to the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts for a special roundtable panel to come to this community to discuss issues of great importance. This day, we discuss the impact of the arts on this county and community. We have a wonderful group of individuals who are joining us. Jacob Spillo, Dance Festival Associate Artistic Director Kim Chan, Mass MoCA Director Christy Edmonds, Williamstown Theater Festival Managing Director Operations and Advancement Kit Ingwe, Berkshire Theater Group Artistic Director and CEO Kate McGuire, Norman Rockwell Museum Director and CEO Lori Norton Moffat, and the Boston Symphony Orchestra President and CEO Chad Smith. Please welcome them back to the program. Kate, you ended the first segment on a beautiful note, and I think a very important one. We're talking about a lot of challenges this morning, things that are, I think, you know, can be addressed, other things that may be insurmountable in the short term. But I'm curious as to, and you've all really touched on this, but I'm interested in your thoughts, and we'll begin with Kate, of what impact do these challenges ultimately have on the art itself, the art we present, the art that the money you have in the bank allows you to present?
Well, we're all very conscious of our budgets. Our boards are highly responsible and committed to making sure that we each, I believe, are able to continue in the traditions that we have. And there are years where we cut back enormously. I mean, I think back to 2008, which actually prompted the merger of Berkshire Theater Festival and the Colonial Theater. In 2008, when the global economy collapsed, I remember reaching out to anyone that would listen and saying, how can we collaborate? Because I'm not quite sure how we're going to be able to get through this. And I happened to walk into this building, and they were looking for an artistic director. And in the most gracious way, the two trustees that I met with said, would your board consider a merger? I was also, though, actively cutting our budget by 25%. And so in the following year, 2009, the merger happened, and we cut our budget by 25% because of what was going on. So I like to say that nobody knows how to do business like a not-for-profit in the arts, because our shows get up, they get up on time, they close, the next one gets up. We are stopping at the train station in a very regular way and on time, and with very little money, and no one on our staffs are making the amount of money that they really should or that they probably could in the for-profit world. I say to my staff all the time, I'm not quite sure why you're here, but I sure am grateful that you're giving your life to this. It's the truth.
Yeah, it is. Sure is. Absolutely.
Christy?
The effect on the art? I mean, I would look at it in this way. If we think about a kind of interdependence, let's say recently, we had Vincent Valdez here. Vincent Valdez lived in San Antonio, moved to Los Angeles, and was working with us on a major exhibition that has just recently opened. The fires in LA meant that we were also trying to do continuous emergency planning on a variety of other things for artists, and in his case, getting him here sooner. So here's an interesting thing. You come into the Berkshires as an artist who, this is, I mean, I felt it myself. It was like the place, I felt at home in a place I'd never lived before. There were the signals of that through the values that you find, through the restaurants, the cafes, the people. When artists are here, especially performing artists, but visual artists, when they're making new work, they're working with art fabricators, at the case of Mass MoCA. I mean, it's a former factory, and my God, we still make with artists. And what you find is that complete strangers will lean into each other for the completion of a project. That has a direct material effect on the art. When artists are performing on the stages, you have a direct effect on them. They can feel you. You can feel them. They know when you're together. And they move towards offering the highest they can for that night in that way. I mean, in performing arts, that project, that piece, that line, that phrase, that violin solo, it will never happen the exact same way ever again in the same way. So audiences become essentially the living archive of the effect of that work. You affect the audience. I mean, the audience affects the artist, and the artists therefore affect their art. And that is a thing that is like a circuit we complete together. Those are the things that I think artists coming into the Berkshires absolutely love. We do provoke new ways of knowing as well. You know, a while ago I had this experience where, going back to Massmoca and the factory and when it became Sprague, I've been around when some of the former factory workers, some of which are now even on our staff and reemployed, they'll point up to the moon and, you know, they're like, I made something that's up there. It's a capacitor. And they'll say it to their kid, and it's a point of real pride. Now you'll see kids saying to their parents, I worked on that mural, or I helped paint that Saul LeWitt drawing. I am in that place. That is part me. When artists are around and they see those continuities of how we put, what are we proud of? We're proud that we accompanied something that allowed us to move and dream a future forward. It's tangible and it's real. You know, dance, it's hard to describe. The apparatus of the body, and Kim's talking about technology at the new Doris Duke Theater. It's a really important thing. The tools that we have access to are expressive means through which to propel new ways of knowing. And the new ways of knowing are only relevant if they're shared. So in the Berkshires, new ways of knowing are happening across sectors, they're happening across art, they're happening across education, the colleges, they're happening in the trades, they're happening with new inventions, they're happening with recipes, they're happening with Italian women teaching young people how to make a real biscotti. They're, you know, we are in, right?
Oh, you've hit a nerve.
We are in a perpetual way of accompanying one another towards the kinds of things that we value as relevant, indicative. It's not about towering global contributions or strategies that are about more. It's about how you make less run deeper, and it's how that depth brings us together differently so that we can learn about biscotti and we can learn about Shakespeare and Tennessee Williams and Beethoven and Nas, and the list goes on and on. Norman Rockwell. I mean, these are the things that I think the resources that we have here are not just money. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. And the not just money has a material effect on artists. The not just money creates a different degree of human connection and inspiration. But we can't just do it on the energy of our care. Yeah. We absolutely must have the financial resources that create a commitment point that allows us to grow and thrive and dream beyond a month ahead. We have to be able to look years ahead and know that that reliability is still going to be there. That also affects art.
Kim, you mentioned in our last hour about, I asked you about your audience, and you said our audiences. We have several different audiences. How do you bring them together and have them understand the different types of art that are going on, and that there is a respect and an appreciation for all of them?
So the Pillow has multiple audience engagement programs that work in tandem with one another. We have family classes on Sunday. I think it's Sundays. We have family classes for West African dance, and then alternating with like creative music dance. So toddlers, preteens, parents learning together. That's a really important part of one of our engagement programs. We also, before every show, have pre-show talks given by Pillow Scholars in Residence. There's a different Pillow and Scholar in Residence for every company that comes through at the Duke and at the Ted Shawn. And those are content experts who are there to share in 15-minute pre-show talks their expertise de-jargoned. So how do you talk about something that seems highly specialized in language that's clear to people who aren't specialists? So that's that, and that program has been going on for, I think, over 30 years. So that's a really big part of our engagement. We also commission these scholars to write program notes for our outdoor stage, where it's a different performance every night. We end each show with a 15-minute talk, a 10-minute talk back with the artist and the audience. So we try to embed within the performances themselves opportunities for audiences to learn, to interact, to feel like they have clues from the pillow of how to have confidence in their own experience without being experts.
And Kit, you have these weekends, but that's getting a lot of stuff in a short period of time.
Yeah, it's 8 core programs and pop-up programming that happens around. The intention here is to really create this community that you see at every show. And as Chad was mentioning, you get coffee in the coffee shop with not just your fellow audience members, but also the artists who have been in the show. And we're curating these moments throughout the weekend of collective gathering. So, and won't just be the shows, and that will help link the programming that you're seeing with the community that you're seeing it with. It is a lot, and it is, I think, a little taste of what the entire Berkshire experience is in a weekend. So for folks who are coming in from out of town, it really gives them an opportunity to feel that community that we have here, to feel that artistic explosion that exists in this this region.
So for you, it's you can get a ticket for the weekend.
Oh yes, you can get a ticket. Yes.
Or a single event.
Absolutely. We acknowledge that there's a lot to do every weekend here in the Berkshires. It can't just be Williamstown for everybody. So yes, you can just buy a ticket to any one of our 8 core programs. So if you just want to see Tennessee Williams on ice, that's cool. You can do that. And if you want to see
cryogenic Tennessee,
please come. It's going to be literally the coolest thing in the Berkshires this summer. yeah, sorry. Bring a coat. Yeah, it's going to be great. Yeah.
You know it's hot, right? I mean, where's the ice go?
It is inside. It's okay. In an ice rink
in North
yes.
Adams.
Right. But it is right. Literally
you. Look at me like I'm an idiot. I'm sorry.
No, sorry. We get asked that question a lot. Like, it's the summer. How are you on ice? It is inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And where is the ice?
It's in North Adams. It's the North Adams Peter Foote Memorial, Veterans Memorial Rink.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Fans of the rink here. That's very, very neat.
It's been really amazing to share a space with hockey teams and...
yeah.
It's very cool.
Can't tell you how much North Adams loves having Williamstown in North Adams.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Until they, go out on the ice and start fighting each other.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, no,
I
know.
No fights.
Well, that's fascinating. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to introduce this wonderful group to our audience and let the audience ask questions, and we'll do that. So things that are on your mind as we come to your community and talk to you about how we're all in this together, including WAMC, that we would love to hear from you. So think of good questions, and we'll get to that right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our live broadcast from the Colonial Theater in downtown Pittsfield, Massachusetts. I'm among
we're
the
We're
going
to expand to other arts organizations.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to do that.
I'll tell you, you all look good from the stage, but down here, you look even better. Very, very, very cool. All right. We have a question over here. We'll start with questions. Remember the rules. I hold the microphone. Okay. You got it. All right. And what's your name?
Hi, I'm Miriam Coppersmith. I'm an independent artist, and I'm also the incoming executive director of a small arts criticism organization called Thinking Dance. We're based in Philadelphia. And my question for the panelists, you talked a lot about the impact of drying up funding and the economic situation. And as I'm sure you know, that impacts artists at such a colossal scale. And in many, you know, large-scale arts organizations, including your own, these artists aren't full-time employees at all, right? They're visiting artists. They're coming in for short amounts of time. And so I'm wondering, within this incredible coalition that you've created, how are you incorporating the voices of artists and their needs in this particular time?
Great question. Who would like to field it?
I can start real quick at MassMoCA. First, many of the employees at MassMoCA are working artists. That is a critical thing, and it adds dimensionality to every single thing that we do, including the belief in a mission. We also put artists at the very center of what we do. That centrality means, first and foremost, freedom of expression. That freedom of expression is not going to buy them dinner. Do you know what I'm saying? So we definitely put resources in front of every single artist. We also create creative development time, residency times, commissioned work, extensive multiple year running support for major exhibitions. So there's that. Artists are in conversation with us globally, nationally, regionally, locally, without a doubt, and across the entire team that funnels up, around, sideways, through and through. So artists, and I say it, It is a critical thing. A lot of artists are also kind of gig workers. How does that, and that is not a dirty word, that is to protect their ability to be mobile. Their craft is often to be mobile and to move. So it's hard to anchor a full-time job, no matter how talented you are. Your full-time job is to imagine form, place, purpose, and ideas. And places like MassMoCA and these organizations all contribute into that mix. Thank you for being an artist.
Yeah. I would also add that everyone that works here, I consider an artist, whether they're a technician or front of house, they're all artists. I was an actor, my husband is a director, my daughter is a dancer, which is complicated as any, almost a poet. But when COVID happened, all of us stayed assembled, and we all continued with our work. So here in Pittsfield, we performed in our parking lot. I advocated strongly, and this wasn't just about me, but Berkshire Theater created the book that allowed artists to go back to work in New York City in theaters. We created the health book. Mm-hmm. I remember being on a Zoom with the union's representatives screaming so loud that I wasn't even aware of people in front of me on the Zoom and saying, who is going to bring the artist back to work? I mean, if you think about it, the median salary for an actor in this country is about $800 a week. $800 times 52 weeks, and most of them aren't working 52 weeks. So I really appreciate the question, and yep, we each do our best to support the artist.
I mean, as you look back on your career, though, that production of Godspell has to be just something that,
you know, as I went
transcends
through it,
anything.
It was my responsibility as the head of Berkshire Theater, as the leader of the organization that is about to turn 100 years old in this community, to make sure that we created that summer.
It was for the industry, like that production for folks in the industry around the country was heralded because it was the first thing that we saw actually happen out of COVID, and you were praised from afar by all of us.
I will also say that I had a little mole. My daughter was the deputy mayor in charge of the COVID response in New York, and she was speaking weekly with health representatives who helped us create that book. So we had a lot of help.
Yeah. And I remember, I mean, and as an audience member, you just,
you went in and you thought, oh, okay, this is a little different, but this is where we should be.
Thank you.
To be together and to see this. It was very, very special. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. What is your name?
Hi, I'm Laura Ephraim.
Where are you from?
Lanesboro.
Lanesboro in the house? Woo! Not really. Okay. Well, what's your question?
So, Joe, you were, I think, hoping, predicting that the name of the current president might not come up this morning, but now you've gone and called on a political scientist who can't help but see the connections between what's going on in politics right now and the fate of the sciences and the humanities and the arts and culture. So I wanted to ask the panelists today about not one, not two, but three big, beautiful words, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which are indeed beautiful, beautiful phenomena, and like many beautiful phenomena, complicated and difficult and contentious, but in need of our attention and our support now more than ever. And so I just was curious to hear about how the current administration's attempts to turn diversity, equity, and inclusion into bad words and bludgeons with which to destroy things like art and science have impacted your organizations locally, and what we can do to ensure the continued flourishing of diversity, equity, and inclusion in arts and culture in the face of these difficult headwinds. And Joe, I'd encourage you to be part of that conversation as well as the leader of this important cultural institution that is the Roundtable, particularly given the recent research by a colleague of mine showing that about 3/4 of the panels over the last 6 months or so have been all white, that there hasn't been a Palestinian or Palestinian-American panelist on the round table since the start of the war in Gaza. Thank you.
Who wants to handle the DEI question?
I'm happy to address that. At Norman Rockwell Museum, our Board of Trustees and staff have had long and deep conversations around the issues of sustaining values of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And at our museum, these values are embedded right in our mission, as our museum dedicated to American illustration art are centered around the values of kindness, respect, and social equity. And when we look at the artwork that Norman Rockwell painted over his lifetime, these values are embedded right in the art and in the art of so many of the visual artists we represent at the museum. Illustration art exists because of a free press. So freedom of expression and the First Amendment rights, as anchored in Norman Rockwell's Four Freedoms, are core to who we are. So it's not about words, policy changes, or attempts at constraint of freedoms. We look at these as core to our mission, and we look to our mission when we have queries about this or in the exhibitions and work that we do.
Anybody else on that?
And I would also say, the organization's commitment to EDI and the values embedded there we show our stripes in the moment when we are challenged. And we are in a moment now where, in this political environment, I think there are a lot of, arts organizations and their commitment to EDI is in the crosshairs. And so for us at the Boston Symphony, this is the moment when we have to be double down. Mm-hmm. This is when we have to say that these are values that we will carry forward. And I will say, it can't just be about words. And I think that is a really important thing. It has to be what's happening on our stages.
That's right.
What's happening in, what are we putting out into the world? As arts organizations, we are here for the public good. You said it first. It's Commonwealth, right? We're a nonprofit for a reason. We are here for the public good. And by that, we have to serve the widest possible audience. And so we are going to be held accountable in this moment, not for just what we say and what we commit to doing, but by what we actually do in the face of this political tide. So I would say continue to hold us accountable.
Yeah.
Ask those questions. And hold our elected officials, hold us as cultural leaders accountable. It's something that we think about very, very, very. It's critically important, and I think that we will show our stripes in this moment.
I would also ask that question that you just asked is asked of the leaders of Berkshire County, because when we're thinking about access to Berkshire County, transportation, housing issues, those are all issues that are issues of boundaries that have been created around the Berkshires. So when we say we want to break down those boundaries, diversity, equity, inclusion, that is a huge piece of why we want to break them down.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
I just want to say, like, directly to your point, I think one of the things that we're doing here is the acronym of DEAI or DEI or EDI, those are words that are value propositions, but they're also around a social movement. Those social movements around various points of justice, what does that actually mean? What does it mean to celebrate difference with equal respect for the dignity of all people? These are really important things. One institution alone cannot just fly up an acronym and make a declaration. It is truly what we put into the work. It is truly how we live it. At Massmoca, we're also addressing, and we are, pluralism, which is critical, absolutely critical. So again, yes, it's the fight to double down and things like that, but I want to also make sure that we're acknowledging far and away the organizations that are specifically dedicated to a particular cultural perspective or creative community or particular racial diversity, et cetera, et cetera. These are the ones that are going to be absolutely, they are directly under attack in the funding of federal dollars. So part of how the practice of diversity, equity, and inclusion rolls is that we stand shoulder to shoulder with the organizations that are under attack and make sure that we are elevating and lifting those voices as well. It isn't just an acronym being declared as a political banner. It is upholding how we put into practice what we know those values stand for and mean.
Thank you very much. Albany's in the house. Hello, how are you?
Hi, my name is Elisha Bacon. I live in Albany, but I'm always from Arizona. And I steward the equity fund at Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation. Last year, we helped underwrite the Black Shears Arts and Culture Study, which asked local artists of color to share their needs. The overwhelming response was simple but profound. They want to be included. So my question is this. As you host world-renowned international acts, how are you making space to cultivate local artists, especially artists of color, into world-renowned acts themselves? The Baba Israel program sounds incredible, and I appreciate the youth engagement you've mentioned, but for those young people who keep developing their craft and want to build a future here in the Berkshires, what awaits them? What infrastructure are you creating to ensure that a world-class talent can grow and stay rooted right here? Our research found that there is a constituency here that wants a space for their art to be recognized and to feel valued for their talent.
Good stuff.
I'm going to jump really quick.
Yep.
Just even though I just talked, one of the things that we do is with, like, we have a space for kids. It's called Kids Space. There's a lot of that. It's hand-on, interactive activity, materials, supplies, teachers, artists, the whole thing. We also have teenagers, activators. The activators are paid. They work with us across the museum and themselves. We're building out spaces where they will have maker spaces as well. We do a teen invitational for Berkshire County. That's a way to look at the future of artists throughout what our education system is holding with young people and independents. And we pair a lot of artists with young people. All over to you guys, because you guys do a lot too.
We hire local artists for our stages all the time.
Absolutely.
With the exception of this current show, which is a one-person show, and he's from out of town, I would say that all of our shows have local artists Christmas Carol, which is a huge production at the end of the year, is a professional production, and we bring in great artists from the Berkshires for that show. The people that you saw out in the lobby teaching young children as you came in, local. We give our spaces over to local artists as well. And we don't employ as many as we probably could, but we certainly try to recognize as many people as are standing in front of us and asking.
Bob is from Dalton. I'm sitting with him. He has a great seat. It's good. It's a nice view. The overhang isn't too bad. You can see everything. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Joe.
What's on your mind?
Several of the panelists have talked about the difficulty of getting, say, from Albany to the Berkshires or to any of the attractions we have here. I'm a member of Berkshire Interfaith Organizing, and we've been touching on that very problem. I'm wondering if the panelists have ever considered forming a coalition to solve that problem of going that last mile from public transportation to the various venues.
Yes.
Let's hitch a ride with Bob.
That has been a topic of conversation in this group, in fact, is what type of could we create or support or fundraise for like a jitney-style transportation opportunity. Christy is the brilliant brain who came up with that idea, and we're really focused on leaning into it this fall.
The other thing I would say in terms of the question around Albany, because it's this incredible place. We have a lot of colleagues there, do a lot of different work, both Troy and in Albany, within the creative community and colleges and infrastructure and whatnot. But it has to also be reciprocity. Mm-hmm. That is actually what builds the bridge. It's not just a one way, it's a both ways. So that's the other piece is, and you know, you were asking earlier about various other things around kids, but I'm interested, hopefully, to talk to you about things that we could be doing in Albany that create those connective tissues, for sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Hi.
What's your name? Julia Kaplan.
Hi, Julia Kaplan. What's your question?
First of all, I want to say it's an honor to have volunteered for every one of you. And I want to make it clear to everybody that volunteering is huge to the survival of every theater, arts, and cultural organization in this county. And one of the things that volunteering does is gives me a place in my heart that I want to give you money. Mm. Not just give you my hours and upon hours upon hours, but my money. And there isn't one event that I work at where I don't form a love affair with all of you and not make a donation.
Mm. That's amazing. Julia Rock.
We love you, Julia.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Thank you very Thank much. You. Big hand. That's Thank a great you. Idea. Well, I mean, obviously, volunteers are the center of it all, aren't they? We need them desperately. Go over here for a question. We've got about 5 minutes left. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is...
No.
Oh, not touching. You're right. Okay, but I can... my name is Lauren Spitz. I am a second homeowner in the Berkshires. Mm-hmm. I am also involved in many...
How many second homeowners do we have here? Okay, so maybe like a quarter. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, it's a two-part question. What challenges and or successes have you found in really attracting a younger audience? Because I come up to Massmoca. I certainly am at Tanglewood. I go to the Rockville. I'm here, you know, I'm part of all of your organizations, Jacob's Pillow, Berkshire Theater Group, Williamstown, not lately, but I'm looking forward
Come on
to
back.
Coming back. And the majority of the audiences, except, of course, for the popular artists, but your hometown, your primary audiences are my age. You know, they're above Medicare age, let's say. And I'm just wondering what you are doing to bring in the younger audiences, because, you know, the money is going to dry up as we go. You know, and your audiences are going to dry up as we leave this place or this world. So where do you see the future of your audience in fundraising?
I would be happy to speak to that. At Williamstown, we're trying to reach younger audiences in many ways. So we're starting online, which is where our audiences live, right? Younger audiences. We're starting in the social sphere and the artists that we hire and the shows that we put on. The talent that we're bringing is talent that appeals to a younger audience. And we're telling stories that appeal to everybody. So it's not about bifurcating audience. It's about actually merging these two mentalities together in the season that we're creating and the experience we're creating. Specifically, we have a pass this season that is $71. It's our 71st season. And this is focused towards young audiences, towards emerging artists, towards students, and with that pass, you can stand by for every single production as many times as you want, and you can see you're guaranteed two of the main stage shows, the shows in our theater. We're also partnering with a school to provide housing at a really low cost so that folks who need to come from out of town but can't afford to stay at the local hotels can, for $200, have four nights of housing here in the Berkshires and Williamstown with us. So trying to really reach them where they are, program for them, and create accessible opportunities to get them here.
Yeah, I'm going to reinforce that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it's programming,
yeah.
Right? If you program for what an audience wants, they're going to come. If you program in a way that is not audience-centric and then you struggle to find an audience, like, you know, it's no way to run a business. So part of it is saying, who do we want to engage with us? Understand your audience. Ask them what they're listening to. Ask them kind of who they want to hear. And audiences will typically come. That's not to say there aren't barriers out here in the Berkshires. I think you're right. Housing is a barrier. Hotel rooms are a barrier. Three-night minimums are a barrier. All of these things are barriers. They are overcome, however, if you program really well. And we've seen some of that. So that's a big thing. And then communication, right? So as arts organizations, and I will say my colleagues on this stage do a really great job of communicating in targeted ways to, as you described, segmented audiences. We don't have one audience that come to the Berkshires, that come to the Tanglewood, that come to Mass Mocha. At Tanglewood, we could probably identify 25 or 30 audiences. And it's audience segmentation. Who are we programming for, and are we reaching them? And that's how we build a season.
I hope you will all join me in thanking this incredible group that we have assembled this morning.
Good to see you.
Kim Chan from Jacob's Pillow, Christy Edmonds from Mass Mocha, Kit Ingwe from Williamstown Theater Festival, Kate McGuire from Berkshire Theater Group, Lori Norton Moffat from Norman Rockwell Museum, and Chad Smith from the BSO and Tanglewood. We have a whole other hour. We're going to hear Congressional Corner, then we're going to have a whole other hour from this stage. And I just want to thank all of our wonderful, wonderful panelists. You have been amazing. I wish you nothing but the best in your work with the Alliance and with this community. And it's wonderful to be a part of it.
And can we thank you,
yes,
by the way, Joe,
and
WAMC?
So
I mean,
Sarah.
Come on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this.